to this week's recording of the local news, brought to you by the Equipment Services for the Blind and the Worcester News. Our service is free, but if you'd like to make a donation towards the running costs, or if you have any comments about our service, please leave a note in your wallet or ring us here at Colin Chance House. There isn't always anyone in the office, but leave a message and someone will return your call as soon as they can. I'm Sally, and Rhiann and Ian and Margaret are reading with me, and Michael is our sound engineer this evening. And we also like to thank Carol's team of administration and copying, who will be working hard tomorrow to get this out to you. We will be featuring the news from Friday the 29th of March until Thursday the 4th of April. We'll include headline stories and then a variety of news items from the local area, what's on, and some sporting items. Then we'll have the obituaries after the closing music, and then the very final thing will be the useful phone numbers, so that you know to access them right at the end if you need them at any other time. So I will now hand you over to Ian, who's opening up the birthday book.
And I'm delighted to report that there will be three birthdays to celebrate this week. On the 9th of April, many happy returns to Kate Hudman. On the 12th, to James Bowden. And on the 13th, to Hazel Jeffs. I hope you all have extremely entertaining and interesting days.
And this is the thought for the week, ending Saturday the 6th of April. Faith is the confident assurance that something we want is going to happen. It is a certainty that what we hope for is waiting for us even though we cannot see it ahead.
And now a roundup of what's happening in the entertainment venues locally. At the Swan Theatre, next Thursday, the 11th of April at 7:30pm, Antiques and a Little Bit of Nonsense. Four of the country's favourite TV personalities from the world of antiques will entertain you from the sales room, television and beyond. Christina Trevanian, Charlie Ross, Philip Serrell and Charles Hanson will be there. It's on Thursday the 11th of April at the Swan and tickets are £29. The evening after, on Friday the 12th of April, again at 7:30, the Dusty Show is on. And this is described as an unforgettable evening of wall-to-wall hits and classics spanning the success of Dusty Springfield's Life and Music. Accompanied by her nine-piece band, this concert takes you from the debut of I Only Want to Be With You and Stay a While through to the Ready Steady Go Motown era. And that's on Friday the 12th of April at 7:30 at the Swan Theatre. Looking ahead a little bit to Wednesday the 24th of April, again at the Swan Theatre, the Sounds of Rod Stewart will be on. And that's described again as a prepare to be taken down memory lane. Join internationally acclaimed Stan Terry as he truly captures the essence of Rod Stewart's music and swagger. And that's on the 24th of April at the Swan Theatre. Over in Malvern next week, there are a few musical concerts. On Thursday the 11th of April at 7:30, the Dudok Quartet from Amsterdam will be there. And they'll be playing Mozart, Rukens and Tchaikovsky. And that's on Thursday the 11th of April at 7:30. On the Friday the 12th of April, the Armonico Consort will be playing a concert of Mozart, the Great Mass in C minor, and Bach's Magnificat in D, and that's on Friday the 12th at 12:30. On April the 30th till Saturday, May the 4th at the Festival Theatre, Cluedo will be on. And this is following the huge success of the smash hit original play. Cluedo is back on stage in 2024 with a brand new hilarious whodunit, Cluedo 2, the next chapter. And it will star Heartbeat and Casualties' Jason Durr and Helen Flanagan. Cluedo 2 is set in the swinging 1960s and introduces a new house, new suspects and lots of new bodies in this all-new tale of murder, mystery and secret passageways. And it's written by BAFTA winners Lawrence Marks and Maurice Gran and directed by Mark Bell. And that's on at Malvern Festival Theatre from Tuesday, April the 30th till Saturday, May the 4th. A bit more locally, over in Worcester, the Site Concern Art and Craft Group is still meeting every Wednesday at 10:30 till 12:30 at the Bradbury Centre, 2 Sansom Walk. And there are limited places, booking is essential, and there's access to tea and coffee, but everybody's invited to join for a relaxed and social group where you can explore your creativity. They ask you to bring your own projects if possible, but they do have their own resources if you need some ideas. The cost there is £2 per session, and you can contact Site Concern on 01905 723 245 or at info@siteconcern.co.uk to book.
Thank you. And now we start with the headline stories, starting on Friday, March the 29th. Welcome to our city, ma'am. The city welcomes Queen Camilla. Crowds gathered to in their hundreds to welcome Queen Camilla as she honoured lives of exemplary service during a historic royal visit to the city to mark Maundy Thursday. Queen Camilla arrived at Worcester Cathedral in a Bentley to the peal of tower bells, while crowds lined the streets of the city in their hundreds, cheering and waving Union flags to welcome her. Some city children waited for hours in the wind and rain to give the Queen flowers that they had picked from their garden, especially for the occasion. Accompanied by a police escort, the cavalcade rolled serenely towards the gates where the Queen was greeted by the Bishop of Worcester, John Ing, and the Lord Lieutenant of Worcestershire, Beatrice Grant. Loud shouts of "Down with the Crown" from a minority of anti-monarchists must have reached the ears of the Queen, wearing an elegant ivory-coloured coat and hat. Her Majesty showed no reaction as she was escorted by waiting dignitaries towards the service, where those in attendance received a personal message broadcast by King Charles III. However, the majority in the crowd welcomed Her Majesty to Worcester, and the Bishop of Worcester later commented on the warmth she displayed towards those who received the Maundy money as part of the ancient tradition. The tradition of presenting alms on Maundy Thursday goes back to at least the 4th century, and in this country the first record of the monarch doing it is in 1213. 4 children of the Royal Almonry handed a posy to the Queen: Susanna Hoskins, Lily Stevens, Henry Pryor and Benjamin Shelard. A special audio message from King Charles III, who could not attend in person because of his cancer diagnosis, was broadcast at the service. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, it is for me a great sadness that I cannot be with you all today. The Maundy service has a very special place in my heart. It has its origin in the life of our Lord, who knelt before his disciples and, to their great surprise, washed their travel-weary feet. And, as we have just heard, in doing so, he deliberately gave to them and to us all an example of how we should serve and care for each other." Inside the red purses presented to the recipients were a £5 coin, which features the image of a Tudor dragon and King Charles III, and a 50p coin commemorating the RNLI. Bright sunshine turned to rain during the service itself, but the skies cleared in time for Queen Camilla and the Bishop to greet recipients and well-wishers outside the cathedral. John Plush was part of the crowd.
It's Maundy Thursday 2024, and I'm standing on probably the windiest, most freezing street corner in Worcester, just opposite the cathedral, where Her Majesty Queen Camilla is due to distribute the Royal Maundy gifts on behalf of His Majesty King Charles. As you can probably hear, the otherwise good-natured crowd assembled with me on Cathedral Square are accompanied by a small but vociferous group of protesters. Cameron Walker, Royal Correspondent for GB News, is here with the camera crew to record this very noisy event.
Ever since King Charles's coronation, they've been very noisy and very active at any big royal event. They tend to be outnumbered by pro-monarchy supporters, but their voice is certainly being heard.
Generally, the people here in Cathedral Square are local supporters.
Well, I wanted to see what it was all about. I know she was coming.
Friends and relatives of supporters.
Well, I came because my wife wanted to come see Queen. That was basically why I've come down, yes. I suppose you don't really see the Maundy service in Worcester that often, do you?
Or slightly bemused foreign visitors.
I am from Turkey.
Turkish.
Yes. I love so much British people. Because very friendly, very nice, very smile.
Patiently clutching a bunch of tulips, which she's hoping to present to Queen Camilla, is young Grace with her mum. But we've heard that there may not be an opportunity to hand them over.
We were going to give them to the Queen, and then we found out she's not stopping. So I'm just going to, you know, show her that my appreciation, sort of.
Luckily for Grace, the Queen is not in her car, but instead going walkabout, and is actually approaching our windswept corner. Grace and her mum have crossed over to her, and I think she's given her the flowers, and she's having a conversation with the Queen. Just in the nick of time, too, as Camilla's car is right here to whisk her away. Grace, what did the Queen say to you?
She just said Happy Easter and thank you for the flowers. And she also said, don't eat too much chocolate. I don't think I'll follow by those rules, so.
Well, I think Grace will have a memory of today that lasts rather longer than any of this year's Easter eggs. This is John Plush for Worcester Talking News on a windy corner just outside the cathedral.
And now for the lead story for Saturday and Sunday, March the 30th and 31st. The Sunday, of course, was Easter Sunday. City primed for bumper Easter. It will be a bumper Easter weekend for the city's pubs, restaurants, as they prepare for a busy bank holiday to help offset the cost of living crisis. Bookings for Sunday lunches, friends meeting for a pint, and sales of meats for roasting are helping to boost city businesses. It has been a tough time for the hospitality industry after the pandemic, and purse strings tightening during the cost of living crisis. The Met Office has also revealed it has been a wetter and duller than average March, leaving many pubs and restaurants unable to make the most of their beer gardens or outdoor dining areas. However, the long weekend will bring a boost, with restaurants bookings up fast at peak times and pubs getting ready to serve plenty of pints. John Dean, operations manager of the Alma Tavern pub on Droitwich Road in Worcester, said, "We are extremely busy. We have a walking group of 14 at lunchtime today, that's Friday, and an Easter crafts fair, so it's very family orientated. We're bucking the trend. We are fortunate to be well supported by the local community. The weather doesn't help, but there's lots of things on over the Easter weekend. We have an Easter-themed quiz on Sunday and a Worcester Talent Evening on Monday with a £100 prize." Matt Williams, who owns the Old Bush on Upton Road in Callow End, said while the recent bad weather didn't help, the pub was expecting a busy Easter period. He said, "Saturday is looking our busiest. It's better to be busy than not. People don't understand the costs. Without money, that's where the problem lies. If you're making a profit, then you're doing okay." Plenty of home cooks are also preparing to cook a roast lamb dinner for Easter, according to a city butcher. Matthew Nelms, who owns M&M Meats Butchers with his wife Michelle on St Swithin Street, said they would be very, very busy this Easter weekend. "Last year was our busiest trading year since opening in 2006. We have started well this year. The cost of living has definitely had an impact. People are not going out as much and not using supermarkets. Customers buy a lot of lamb and turkey breasts sell well. I think Queen Camilla's visit and the weather put us in good stead for a busy day and weekend."
And this is the headline from the Worcester News on Monday, the 1st of April. Under the headline, arrests after a serious attack. A man is hurt in an assault near a pub. A man was seriously injured in an assault near outside a pub in the early hours of Easter Sunday. Police said the man in his 30s was badly hurt with a head wound and taken to hospital following the assault outside the Blackpool Inn in Worcester. The incident took place in the car park of the pub between midnight and 1 a.m. yesterday. Two men, aged 20 and 23, were arrested on suspicion of GBH and are helping police with their inquiries. Police have now appealed for any witnesses. DI Mark Walters of the Major Investigation Unit said, "We would like to appeal for any witnesses to this incident to come forward and help our investigation. We understand there was a charity event on at the Blackpool Inn, so anticipate there will be people who may have seen the assault and can assist us. Anyone with information should call 101 and give the log number 271 of March the 31st. Alternatively, information can be shared anonymously with the independent charity Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111 or by visiting crimestoppersuk.org. On Saturday evening, the pub was hosting a charity fundraising event in honour of Claire Adkins, who died in a crash on the A44 Spetchley Road alongside Courtney Hemming and six-year-old Leo Painter. Claire Adkins, 39, and Courtney Hemming, 26, both from Worcester, died at the scene of the crash on Thursday, February the 22nd. Leo was taken to Worcestershire Royal Hospital, but died shortly afterwards. The Blackpool Inn said in a Facebook message yesterday, "Late last night, once the pub had closed, there was an incident out on the main path. Due to this, the car park has been closed today and will remain closed for the day. We are open and trading as normal. Thank you for your patience and understanding."
On Tuesday, April the 2nd, the sad headline read, "Shock as bubbly dad Nicky dies suddenly." Tributes have been paid to a Worcester man who always lived to have a laugh after his unexpected death last Friday. Nicky Jonesy Jones, originally from Malvern, collapsed and died outside Home Bargains on Shrub Hill Retail Park on March the 29th. Paramedics tried to save him after his collapse at around 10 a.m, but he was pronounced dead around 20 minutes later. Mel Banks, who is Mr. Jones's sister, paid tribute to him, saying, "He always loved to have a laugh. No one ever had a bad word to say about him. He had lots of friends from Malvern who were devastated. He was well liked and popular. He was always there for people. He would talk to anyone. He cared for people. It's shocked us, really." Miss Banks said he had only nipped to the store to buy painkillers, having complained of stomach ache that morning. He lived at St. Paul's Hostel on Tallow Hill, where he had also earlier complained to staff about a pain in his neck. Tributes to Mr. Jones, who was 42, have flooded in from friends and family, with bunches of flowers and candles left outside the Home Bargains store. Jade Bienview, Mr. Jones's former partner, said he had been due to visit his children, Harley, Summer and Brett, later that day. She described him as a bubbly character who loved his kids. "He was the centre of the party. He'll be really missed," she added. "He always did silly things to make the kids laugh. If you dared him to do something, he would just for a laugh." Miss Bienvenue said two of her children left flowers near where Mr. Jones had died. She met Mr. Jones in 2007, just before she turned 17. Mr. Jones was a big football fan, supporting Liverpool, and had always wanted to take his sons to Anfield. "He was quite well known. Everyone knew who he was, especially in Malvern," said Miss Bienvenue. "He was well liked. Everyone said my youngest son is the spitting image of him. It's not sunk in yet." Linda Jones from Malvern said her son meant everything to her and was a lovely lad. It's so hard to accept. I'm really going to miss him, she added. Miss Jones said Nick had struggled with drinking and his family had tried to help him. She added, I'll always love him. We are heartbroken. We knew he wouldn't be here long. When the police rang me, I knew he had gone. He was so funny, though. A lot of memories that I won't forget.
And Wednesday, April the 3rd, stabbing at hotel. GBH arrest after man is attacked. A man was stabbed at a countryside hotel near Worcester. The man was attacked at the Pear Tree on Smite Lane in Hindlip yesterday afternoon. He was taken to hospital with a stab wound in a hand. Another man was arrested for the attack. A cordon was in place with police standing guard as the Worcester News went to press. Police were called at about 1:30 p.m. yesterday. A spokesman for West Mercia Police said, It is believed the injury was caused by a knife. His injuries are not thought to be life-threatening. A man has been arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm with intent and is in custody.
And the lead story for Thursday, the 4th of April, follows on from that of Wednesday. Man arrested for attempted murder. A man has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after an attack at a countryside hotel. There were chaotic scenes at the Pear Tree Inn in Hindlip on Tuesday afternoon, April the 2nd, with multiple police officers and a forensic team in attendance after an alleged stabbing. A 31-year-old man was originally arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm, but has since been rearrested on suspicion of attempted murder. A 25-year-old man was taken to hospital with chest and hand wounds. He is currently in a stable condition and his injuries are believed to not be life-threatening. Counter-terrorism Policing West Midlands are now leading the investigation, supported by West Mercia Police. Grant Wills, West Mercia Police Local Policing Assistant Chief Constable, said, It is important we fully understand the circumstances of this incident and are working closely with colleagues at Counter-Terrorism Policing West Midlands as part of the investigation. We understand incidents of this nature can be concerning to our local communities, and I would like to reiterate that a man has been arrested and we do not believe there is a wider risk to the public. A cordon is in place at the Pear Tree Inn with additional officers in the area, both to carry out inquiries and offer reassurance. In addition, officers from the local Safer Neighbourhood team will be in the area carrying out patrols, and I would encourage anyone who is concerned to speak to an officer.
Violent crimes, aren't
they? Yes, gosh. Stabbing, it's ridiculous, isn't it? We've got four sporting items. So when we get towards the end, I don't know, timing-wise, you put the light on for us?
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
Have we got three sporting articles?
We've got four, yeah.
Oh, right.
We've got a pool, Worcester County Senior Pool Team, an ex-warrior, City football and the cricket overseas signing.
What of the cricket?
I always think of that, Margaret. Okay, you have the cricket. Rhiann, any choice?
I wasn't. Just give me one. I wasn't following what there was.
Warriors.
Choices, but,
football.
I'll take that's nearest. The pool. Oh, the pool. Okay.
What do I get? Ex warriors favourite.
Okay, and I'll get the cup tie moved. Azusa. Okay, so when the red light goes on, whoever's reading, the next person will start the sport. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with you, Margaret, aren't we, with the general news?
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Whenever. Is everybody ready? Are you ready, Margaret?
Yeah.
Ready when you are. Margaret's going to start with the general news.
I'll flash some lights for you, Margaret.
Oh, exciting.
Tell me what it means.
There you go.
Oh, well, I'm looking at that. When the light flashes, I start, is that right?
I think you're ready to go, with
okay. Mm-hmm. A city restaurant owner, Adam Giagnotti, faces a £400,000 bill for the collapsed retaining wall which toppled down into the street below. The dangerous garden is...
Sorry, Margaret. I faded the wrong thing up.
Oh, right. Okay.
Can I ask you...
Sorry.
To start again.
Start again. Okay, fine.
Thank you.
No? Okay. A city restaurant owner, Adam Giagnotti, faces a £400,000 bill for the collapsed retaining wall of his garden, which toppled down into the street below. The dangerous garden is now out of bounds for the family, including his two young children who must play inside. His youngest boy, five-year-old Oscar, offered all his pocket money towards repairing the collapsed wall in Reservoir Lane off Rainbow Hill. The retaining wall collapsed on Friday, February the 9th, sending rubble and mud spilling all over the road from the garden above. Even the sandpit where his children, aged 5 and 7, play, toppled down from the 12-metre-high wall into the road below. The 42-year-old said, "The barrier was put up in the garden on the day it happened, but I didn't realise I would be paying for it all, or the traffic light system. The council has just fenced it all off and left it." So far, the family has received two letters, a Section 77 telling them the garden is now in a dangerous condition, and another about the cost of recovery. Mr. Giagnotti is exploring why the wall was placed back on the deeds of the house and is keen to speak to anyone who may have more historic details and archive material about the wall, which predates the existence of the semi-detached house he bought just over 9 years ago. "My children are asking why Oscar gave me all his money, about £25, to pay to fix the wall. He took his treasure, as he calls it, to pay for the wall. The children know not to go into the garden now." He explained, when they moved into the house, a surveyor had declared the wall adequate for its purpose, but that only covered the day of the survey itself. "We don't understand what has changed in 9 years. I have insured everything correctly. We have done everything by the book. If we had known there was a risk, we would not have bought the house," he said. "They employed a gardener to maintain the wall and keep it clear of any vegetation. They paid £217,000 for the house when they bought it, but they have since invested a further £200,000 to turn it into a 5-bedroom property." He said he wished to thank neighbours for their support. Mr. Giagnotti said it is in information he needs about the history of the wall, so he can understand why it's all down to me. Quotes, "He understands insurance paid out for a collapse on the same wall in 1998. What's the difference, he said now. A spokesman for the Worcestershire County Council said in a previous statement, "We acknowledge that a petition has been set up regarding the collapsed wall in Reservoir Lane. We will now consider the further information provided."
A record shop owner says music-loving customers have offered to run the store for him following his decision to retire. Nick Banks, a lifelong Worcester resident, has run Market Hall Records at the Shambles in Worcester for a little over 3 decades. Having enjoyed a long run in the business, Mr. Banks has decided now is the right time to step away from running the shop and enjoy the next stage in his life. He said he had marked 30 years at the shop last year, but insisted it's time to move on. He added, "I still enjoy it, but you have to move on at some point. I've enjoyed it, but it's time to do other stuff." Mr. Banks, 66, says he has sold quite a lot of albums over the past 30 years, though he cannot put an estimate on how many. I can't really remember the most expensive album I have sold, he adds. It was probably an obscure progressive rock album or something. While Mr. Banks can recall Sex Pistols guitarist Glenn Matlock popping in once, he admits he's hopeless at recognising people. The shop has seen a boost in sales of vinyl records recently, something Mr. Banks has noticed growing in popularity among customers. It has become trendy again, he said. You get a lot of university students buying them. It's come around again. People are saying it's popular, and it has really taken off over the last few years. Mr. Banks says he has no plans at all for his impending retirement, although holidays will definitely be on the radar, with a lot of walking with the wife. He says, I've run the shop alone, but Kaz has helped me run it occasionally. I don't know what all the fuss is about. The whole point of retiring is to do nothing. Quite a few customers have said that they will miss me. Some have even offered to run the shop for me. They are really nice. They have become more than friends. One customer said he had been coming here for 25 years. He remembered the first album he bought here. He said he was only a little lad when he first came here with his dad for the first time. A lot come back again. We've had a lot of regular customers over the years.
The honoured recipients of Amaundi money have spoken of how humbled they felt to receive their gifts from Queen Camilla and of her beautiful smile and great warmth. 40 people from across Worcestershire and Dudley received Maundy money from HM the Queen in recognition of their exemplary Christian service to church and community after over many years. The special service was held in the Worcester Cathedral for the first time since 1980. In total, 75 men and 75 women received money equivalent to the monarch's age. The tradition of presenting alms on Maundy Thursday goes back at least to the 4th century, and in this country, the first record of the monarch doing it is in 1213. Among those to receive the purse was Bill Simpson, 87, of Red Hill in Worcester, who has been involved in St Martin's Church in London Road since he moved to the city in 1980, tending the garden and grounds. The former principal of Pershore College and former director of horticulture for the Royal Horticultural Society was a warden at the church for 6 years and is now the deputy treasurer. Previously, he was awarded the MBE in 2011 for services to horticulture and the Victoria Medal of Honour for horticulture. He said of receiving the Maundy money, "It is a great honour. The Queen noticed my MBE. I thought at first she was referring to the VHM, Royal Victoria Medal." Mr. Simpson displayed both accolades on his jacket lapel when he received his latest honour from Queen Camilla. Another recipient was the Reverend Peter Davis, associate priest at Clanes and St. George's Church in Worcester, recognised for services to the church. He described his invitation as a big surprise and felt surrounded by those who really deserved it. He served as a licensed lay minister from 2000 and was ordained in 2013. He's been part of All Saints Church as well as St George's and Clanes in Worcester. Before ordination, he was a lay canon on the cathedral chapter. He's part of the diocesan deliverance ministry team. Reverend Davis, 76, of Battenhall, Worcester, said, "During the service, he was reminded of the hymn, Jesus shall reign where'er the sun, and particularly the line, let every creature rise and bring peculiar honours to our King." He added, "We have peculiar honours brought to our King, and this is a peculiar honour from our King. It is a great honour." He recalled how he was welcomed into a church when he was 11 years old. "I have never forgotten that. It's the gift of welcome," he said. Another recipient was Barbara Barrett, 87, of Coventry. Originally from Glasgow, she's helped adults learn to read for over 50 years. She said of Queen Camilla, "She was delightful, so pretty, with such a lovely, happy face. She looked as if she was really pleased to see you and to welcome you. I also got the feeling that King Charles's message, it was a wonderful message. We felt he was genuinely sorry not to be here himself, which I found quite moving." Sophie Dodds, 85, of Harvington near Evesham, was another to receive the Maundy money after her work with the church when she retired 24 years ago. She organised summer fetes, Christmas fairs and afternoon teas. She has been an integral part of the life of St James's Church in Harvington, including Bible discussions. After retirement, she was church warden for 11 years, running the summer and Christmas fetes for 10 years and project managing a £180,000 refurbishment of St James's Church. She also worked for the U3A for 24 years, teaching German classes. Mrs. Dodd said, "I'm very honoured. The experience was wonderful. It was very special. I thought the service itself was beautifully put together. The Queen thanked me for what I had done, and I thanked her as well for receiving me. It was very emotional. I felt extremely humbled. I could only have done this because of the help of others and the support of the community. Otherwise, I would not be able to do it. This award is not just for me. It is for everyone in the community." In his role as Lord High Almoner, Bishop John accompanied H.M. the Queen. He said, "This is an immensely special service, and I know it will mean a huge amount to those who have been chosen to receive the coins, all of whom will have given years of service to their local communities." After the service, he described the experience as wonderful and praised all who had given such fantastic service to the community, inspired by their Christian faith. The Queen stepped into this role so wonderfully, and the warmth she exhibited to all the recipients was very touching, he said.
Swollen rivers have once again turned fields near Worcester into a lake and battered a partially collapsed historic bridge as flooding caused disruption over the Easter break. Flood warnings and alerts were in force across Worcestershire yesterday, Good Friday, as heavy rainfall caused river levels to rise on the Avon, Severn and Teme. The Met Office says the weather is expected to become more settled over the Easter weekend after a spell of wet and windy conditions. However, showers are expected to return to the southwest on Sunday and more wet weather may be on the way. Millbank Fladbury was closed at Jubilee Bridge, Fladbury, from Millbank to Ney Lane, due to flooding. Mill Lane, Hanley Castle, was also closed. The closure affected New Street, Upton on Severn, between the old fire station to the fruit farm, U61204 junction. The warnings were in force on Friday on the River Severn at Court Meadow, Kemsey and Callow End, and the River Avon at Strensham and Breedon. Flood alerts were also in place on Bow and Piddlebrook, Kemsey Village and the Lower Teme at Bransford. On Friday, river levels had risen at the Kemsey Yacht Club, River Gauge, with flooding of property, roads and farmland expected. The peak was expected to come on Friday afternoon, with the flooding affecting Court Meadow Caravan Park. A peak at Kemsey Yacht Club of 6.1 to 6.3 metres was predicted. Meanwhile, the above image shows widespread flooding in the fields at Powick Hams near Carrington Bridge after heavy rain and tornado conditions on Thursday evening. Sorry, I can't describe that image as I haven't personally got it. The River Teme has risen, with the archways of the Powick Old Bridge once again entirely submerged as the fast-flowing and swollen water sent more driftwood crashing into the side of the structure. Concern about Powick Old Bridge has been rising since the partial collapse of the wing wall of the medieval structure at the end of January. The bridge remains closed to pedestrians and cyclists. The bridge is considered a vital part of Worcestershire's rich heritage as the site of the first skirmish of the English Civil War, the Battle of Powick Bridge, on September the 23rd, 1642. It was also of key importance during the last battle of the Civil War, the Battle of Worcester, on September the 3rd, 1651.
A popular plant fair is returning. One of the region's best-loved gardening events is taking place in Worcestershire later this month. Spetchley Gardens, specialist plant fair, is a firm favourite among gardening enthusiasts. Situated on the main lawn in front of Spetchley House, over 20 specialist nurseries will offer a multitude of rare and unusual plants for sale. This year, the nurseries will be joined by 20 local artisan maker stalls, adding even more value to what is already a fabulous day out. From the novice gardener to a seasoned plant hunter, there will be plants for everyone, with the nursery growers themselves on hand to offer help and advice. The local artisan makers will be selling a wide variety of gifts, foods, drinks, designer products and jewellery. Book your tickets online for the best price. The event takes place on Sunday, April the 28th, 10:30 till 4 p.m. Online early bird price is £6 for adults. And see the website for prices at www.spetchleygardens.digittickets.co.uk.
A graffiti-strewn wall is set to undergo a transformation from a group of university students. University of Worcester students will team up with artist Rob Draper to create a colourful mural to celebrate the city's musical heritage. The artwork will span the walls between the new Elizabeth Garrett Anderson building and the Green Self Storage building on the route linking Hilton Road and Hardwick Close. Work to create the mural will begin on Wednesday, April the 10th, and is expected to be completed in around 6 days. However, the work hinges on weather conditions. The design, which centres around a quote by Worcester native and legendary composer Edward Elgar, blends the creativity of Draper and a team of university art students to showcase the city's musical heritage. Draper said, "I hope that the colour palette is uplifting and that the Edward Elgar quote that is location specific to Worcester has a broad, positive and personal appeal to viewers." The project has seen Draper at the helm in a creative directorial capacity, working closely with the students. He said, "Working with university students has been effortless. It has been creative and engaging, throwing in ideas and experimenting, trying different concepts, and they're all committed to making it as good a project as it can be. The project champions inclusivity, incorporating a poem penned by participating student Cosmin Popescu, displayed in both written and braille form on either end of the mural." Mr. Popescu said, "Art is something which is predominantly seen with the eyes, but if we can take it to the next level and make it more sensory, society becomes more inclusive. People who have visual impairments deserve to know that there are artists out there who have them in mind and that we fight for them to have a stronger connection with art." Students from New College in Worcester also plan to take part in painting the mural alongside their Regency High School peers. Ree Han, Head of Department for Art and Design Communication, said, "This wall is neglected but gets a lot of passing traffic. It's used by students and locals every day."
It's been a great start to April for One Street in Worcester after it scooped £1,000 in the People's Postcode Lottery. People who play the lottery and live in the postcode WR52HY in Worcester won the prize on Monday, April the 1st. The winning postcodes belong to the People's Postcode Lottery players who live in and near the Arundel Drive area of Battenhall. How to play People's Postcode Lottery. For £12 a month, players will be entered into all draws to win the prizes. Subscriptions to the Postcode Lottery supports a range of charities across the UK. A minimum of 33% of the ticket price goes to charity. The People's Postcode Lottery manages lotteries for 20 charities, and each one having one draw a month. The lottery is hugely popular nationally and supports a wide range of charities and good causes across Britain and around the world. To date, they've provided more than £1.1 billion in funding, which is helping thousands of organisations and projects.
Rail passengers are being warned of fresh disruption to services because of strikes and an overtime ban by train drivers in a long-running pay dispute. Members of ASLEF, at 16 train operators, will stage 3 one-day strikes across different train operating companies between April the 5th to 8th, as well as an overtime ban from Thursday, April the 4th to Saturday, April the 6th, and from Monday, April the 8th to Tuesday, April the 9th, which may lead to short notice cancellations. Revised timetables for the strikes have been drawn up, and passengers are being advised to check before they travel. There will be changes to services across large parts of the network, with some train operators not running any services on strike days. Train companies say they will operate as many services as possible, but there will be regional variations, with some areas having no services on strike days, while those that do run will start later and finish much earlier than usual, typically running between 7:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. A spokesperson for Rail Delivery Group said, "We are sorry that this round of strikes called by the ASLEF leadership risk disrupting journeys. While we are doing all we can to keep trains running, and we will work with our industry partners to keep as many trains running as possible, unfortunately, there will be reduced services between Thursday, April the 4th to Tuesday, April the 9th. Our advice is to check before you travel and follow the latest travel information. Strikes will be held on the following days. Friday, April the 5th, Avanti West Coast, East Midlands Railway, West Midlands Trains and Cross Country. Saturday, April the 6th, Chiltern, GWR, LNER, Northern and Transpennine Express. Monday, April the 8th, C2C, Greater Anglia, GTR's Great Northern, Thameslink and Southern, including Gatwick Express, South Eastern, South Western Railway. ASLEF has staged a series of strikes since the dispute started 20 months ago, arguing that drivers have not had a pay rise for years, despite many working through the pandemic.
Have you ever wanted to play the ukulele? If so, this is the ideal workshop for you, and no musical knowledge or experience is necessary. Worcester Ukulele Club is delighted to offer a beginner's workshop at Worcester University St John's campus in the Hines building on Sunday, April the 14th from 10:30 till 12:30 p.m. The spokesman said, "Come and join us and learn to play the ukulele and have some fun. If you have been given a ukulele but have no idea how to make music with it, then this course is just for you. You don't need to own a ukulele. There will be instruments to borrow for the morning. You don't need to know anything about music when you arrive, but by the time you leave, you should have learned a few basic chords and a simple song or two." Members of Worcester Ukulele Club decided to hold a beginner's workshop to share their passion for the ukulele and the fun they have playing it. The workshop, which is for over 18s only, costs £5. For details to book, you contact workshop at email doodoo.com. Worcester Ukulele Club members are a friendly bunch. The club began back in 2010 with a handful of people on a course at the Elgar School of Music. There are now about 100 active members, or Wookies as they are now known. Many perform at gigs, raising money for the club's chosen charity, which this year is Spectrum Days, a charity based in Droitwich, which supports young adults with profound and multiple learning disabilities. Last year, the club raised over £18,000 for Acorns Children's Hospice. Over the years, the club has met at different venues as membership has grown. It now meets at Worcester University in the Worcester Room St John's campus, Monday evenings from 7:30 until 9:30, and regularly attracts some 60 players.
When Queen Camilla visited Worcester for Maundy Thursday, it brought back memories of previous royal visits, and specifically from Queen Elizabeth II, who was always warmly welcomed by the people of the city and died in September 2022, aged 96. It all started before she even became Queen. Her first official visit to Worcester to tour the Royal Worcester Factory and open the Porcelain Museum was in 1951, minus Philip, and when still Princess Elizabeth. She became Queen in February 1952, after the death of her father, George V, and it was not until 1957 the city had its first close look at the new royal couple. April the 24th was a memorable day for more than 7,000 schoolchildren who packed Worcestershire County Cricket Club's New Road ground. The Queen and Prince Philip were slowly driven around the outfield, standing in the back of a maroon Land Rover. It was the second day of a two-day official visit, with the overnight stop spent on the royal train near Leigh Court, which had arrived at Shrub Hill Station the previous evening. The royal couple were driven down Lowismore, St Nicholas Street, the Cross and High Street to the floodlit Guildhall for dinner with 500 guests. The following morning they arrived at Henwick Station and drove to the cricket ground. While the band of the Royal Artillery played, the Queen inspected a guard of honour before visiting Malvern's Royal Radar Establishment and Malvern College before going into Herefordshire. There followed royal visits by both the Queen and Prince Philip in 1980 for the Maundy Thursday service at Worcester Cathedral, and in 1989 for the 800th anniversary of the first royal charter to Worcester. They paid tribute to the Queen's own Mercian yeomanry and unveiled a plaque to open new £350,000 workshops at the cathedral. There followed a tour before an invited audience of 1,500, and lunch was taken in the Guildhall with 200 special guests. The Queen visited again in 2001 as part of the 250-year celebrations of Worcester porcelain, and to open the new Worcester City Police Station. Her final visit to Worcester was in 2012 as part of her Diamond Jubilee tour. The Queen and Duke of Edinburgh officially opened Library and History Centre, The Hive.
And now an item written by our Mayor, Councillor Louis Stephen. My time as Mayor is rapidly coming to an end. I've met with dozens of community groups and attended several major events in Worcester, which simply could not function without the support of volunteers. People who volunteer tell me they do it because they want to make a difference. However, what has also really struck me is just how much volunteers get out of this experience too. And this is something I think we do need to shout about to encourage others to come forward. Volunteering helps to combat isolation, as people make new friendships and people who volunteer learn new skills and get a confidence boost, which can help them get a job to be beneficial in other areas of life. Volunteering often involves physical exercise, but above all, I think it gives people a massive mental health boost to know that they're part of the community and are making a positive contribution to it. Many volunteers I've met are extremely modest about their achievements, and they often have a tendency to shy away from the limelight. However, I think it's high time we shouted about the enormous difference they're making, both to Worcester as a place and to the people who live here. I've tried to play my part. I thank you goes a long way. It's been my pleasure to welcome many hundreds of volunteers for a guided tour of the Guildhall, to be followed by tea in the Mayor's Parlour. Do you know of an unsung volunteer hero who might appreciate a thank you tea with the Mayor? Please let me know at civicoffice@worcester.gov.uk.
Nearly a quarter of children in Worcester were living in poverty last year, new figures show. Figures from the Department for Work and Pensions show 4,120 Worcester children aged under 16 were living in relative poverty in the year to March 2023. It means 22.6% of children in the area were living in a family whose income was below 60% of average household income before housing costs. They also claimed child benefit and at least one other household benefit. This was up from 21.2% the year before and the highest rate since comparable records began in 2014-15. Of all the children facing poverty in Worcester, 1,109 were below school age. Robin Walker, MP, said, "Over the course of this government, we have increased the amount people earn by replacing the minimum wage, as the lowest earners could earn in May 2010 of £5.80, with a national living wage, which now stands at £10.42. We have also ensured the lowest paid keep more of the money they earn by almost doubling the personal tax allowance, so people don't pay any income tax on the first £12,570 they earn. We have improved the life chances of young people by ensuring those in the least well-off areas receive more funding for education through the pupil premium. In 2018, we introduced the Holiday Activity and Food Programme to provide healthy food and enriching activities to disadvantaged children outside of term time, making us the first government of any colour to do so. As the MP for Worcester, I have always sought to ensure help is available for those who need it most, whether that's through supporting a higher living wage, help through the welfare system, or access to affordable credit and a cap on payday lenders. I am also proud that during my time, youth unemployment has fallen, and we have the lowest rate of young people not in education, employment, or training. Across the UK, there were 2.5 million children living in low-income families before housing costs. However, the number hit by record high and was nearly double after housing costs were considered, with 4.3 million children in relative poverty. Tom Collins, who is Labour's prospective parliamentary candidate, said, "As a parent, I find these local poverty figures heartbreaking. Families are worse off under this government, and our children are paying the price. Children in Worcester should be thriving, able to enjoy life to the full. Labour has a plan to reduce bills, support families, and break down the barriers to opportunity. This year's general election will be a chance for all of us to choose a better future for our children."
Dangerous behaviour seen at level crossings in Worcestershire has sparked a safety warning ahead of the Easter period. Network Rail has unveiled disturbing CCTV footage which highlights three such incidents that each occurred in March. These incidents involved an individual who forced their way past closed barriers on Wednesday, March 13th at Hartlebury, and at the level crossing in Worcestershire. At the Blakedown level crossing in Worcestershire on Monday, March the 18th, and again at West Midlands Langley Green level crossing on Monday, March the 4th, in which a van and a car respectively disregarded signals and dashed through lowering barriers. The footage captured by train drivers or hidden cameras illustrates a fraction of the 60 cases of misuse reported in the Midlands region since the beginning of 2024, with four considered near misses involving pedestrians. Over the past 12 months, there have been 225 reported cases of misuse, with 27 classified as near misses. There has also been a surge in incidents involving children and young people. In light of this, Network Rail's level crossing managers have reached out to schools in the area with a letter detailing the dangers of railway misuse. They have sought the backing of parents, guardians, and the community to mitigate these issues. Natalie Stratton, head of operations, operational risk for Network Rail's central route, said, "There's never any excuse for the kind of reckless behaviour you see in this video. Many people, especially young people, fail to understand the danger they put themselves and others in when they make the choice to ignore the safety rules. Ms. Stratton added, typically we see incidents of misuse and acts of crime rise in April due to the better weather and the lighter nights. And I'd like to use this video as a reminder to anyone who uses level crossings to do so safely. Network Rail is reiterating its guidelines on safety using level crossings, which urge people to always obey all the rules. The key advice is to stay focused, follow all signs and instructions, and check both directions before crossing.
A controversial proposal for a drive-through coffee shop would heap misery on residents if it gets the green light, says a councillor as he joins in the chorus of complaints. Councillor Owen Cleary has criticised the application to create a Starbucks drive-through at Elgar Retail Park in Blackpool in Worcester and says he has called it in with planners over residents' objections. The Conservative City Councillor for Warnden said he had received many representations about the application, which has yet to come before Worcester City Council's Planning Committee for a decision, with many concerns from residents linked to traffic and rubbish. Although the plans were withdrawn last December, a new application was submitted by Legal and General last month, in which the position of the drive-through has been altered because of the protected trees. So far, Legal and General have provided no official comment on the application. Councillor Jill Desira, also a Warnden councillor, called in the new application as soon as it was lodged with the planning department. Now she plans to fight it if and when it comes before the City Council's planning committee, saying she was delighted Councillor Cleary was now supporting the objections. The Labour councillor excused herself from an earlier planning meeting when she declared her objection to the first application on July the 12th last year. Together with residents, Councillor Desira took part in a protest against the proposal last September with banners and placards. She was planning to speak against the previous application for the drive-through Starbucks before it was withdrawn over tree preservation orders in the car park, and says she will fight the new amended plans as well. Councillor Cleary said residents had already complained that when leaving for work in the morning, the traffic flow is so heavy that they are often forced to travel the wrong way out of their estate for a good while before they can turn around and join the traffic flow of their intended direction. He said a second representation was connected to rubbish from existing businesses, including rubbish dumped in their gardens, with some residents complaining they had taken to tidying the retail park site themselves. Councillor Cleary said, I have referred this application to the planning committee because I believe Masons Drive residents' concerns must be paramount. They deserve an opportunity to air their views. Adding a drive-through so close to a residential estate will exacerbate the existing problems. This will heap more misery on residents who are already sick and tired of the traffic and mess they face daily. It is great that Worcester is attracting businesses, but this is the wrong place for another drive-through business. Councillor Desira, who took part in a protest against the previous Starbucks application, said, I am delighted that Councillor Cleary has finally come off the fence. This project was flawed when it was proposed in June and it remains a bad idea.
A murder suspect accused of killing his partner's mother and attempting to kill his partner sobbed and shook violently as he appeared in court for a plea hearing. Damien Homer appeared at Worcester Crown Court via video link yesterday, Tuesday, charged with the murder of Wendy Hill and the attempted murder of her daughter, Stacey Hill. The 50-year-old of Haresfield Close in Warnden, Worcester, appeared in court 1 before Judge James Burbage, KC, via a large video link screen as the case was listed for a plea and trial preparation hearing. The charges are in relation to the death of 61-year-old Wendy Francis and injuries sustained by her daughter Stacey Hill at an address in Haresfield Close on Saturday, March the 2nd. Stacey Hill, aged 38, was found with life-threatening injuries but is now in a stable condition. Throughout the hearing, Homer, wearing a dark T-shirt, sobbed and shook while clutching a book in one hand. At one stage, he held his head in his hands, and on another, he wiped his face with a tissue. The case was prosecuted by Sean Collins. Homer was represented by Timothy Hannan, KC. During the short administrative hearing, Homer was asked by the clerk if he could hear her, and he answered, "I can," while breaking down in tears. She asked him if he was Damien Homer, and he replied, "I am," before details of the indictment were read out by his advocate, who requested an adjournment. Mr. Hannan asked that his client request an adjournment for a psychiatric report to consider issues of fitness to plead. A new date for a plea and trial preparation hearing was listed for Friday, June the 7th at Worcester Crown Court. A date for a trial, if required, had already been set, starting on Tuesday, August the 27th. Homer's custody time limit was announced as September the 2nd. Judge Burbage said, "Damien Homer, I will adjourn your case to June the 7th. You can enter a plea then. By that stage, you will have seen a psychiatrist. In the meantime, Homer was remanded in custody."
The annual celebration of the country's most renowned composer has announced a range of events for this year's festival. The Elgar Festival, celebrating the life and work of Sir Edward Elgar, will take place from Monday, May the 27th to Sunday, June the 2nd, and will feature a selection of inaugural events. The festival has teamed up with the Morgan Sports Car Club and Malvern Hills District Council to be the end point for an iconic car rally around the Elgar route. Scheduled to start from the Morgan Motor Factory at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, May the 28th, rally participants will arrive at Elgar's birthplace, the Firs in Worcester, for the final session of a conducting masterclass at 3:30 p.m. The festival's featured composer, Steve Elcock, will share his experiences as a self-taught composer alongside festival director Kenneth Woods at the Firs at 1:30 p.m. on Thursday, May the 30th. Esther Abrami, an upcoming talent on the classical music scene and the festival's 2024 Artist in Residence, will perform at Huntington Hall at 1 p.m. on Friday, May the 31st. Her programme features Vaughan Williams's The Lark Ascending, alongside a selection of Elgar miniatures. Julian Lloyd Webber, internationally acclaimed cellist and festival patron, will offer the audience a glimpse into his work with the Elgar Cello Concerto on Sunday, June the 2nd at 11 a.m. at the Museum of Royal Worcester. Artistic director of the Elgar Festival, Kenneth Woods, said, "Our aim is to bring the music of Elgar to everyone, and what better way to do this than continue to introduce extra added value initiatives? We are delighted to announce these new additions and look forward to welcoming you all to what looks set to be our best ever festival." Other highlights of the festival include the English Symphony Orchestra's gala performance at Worcester Cathedral, and a series of late-night Club Elgar concerts. The Guildhall will feature an exhibition of Elgar memorabilia on loan from prestigious private collections. Since its launch in 2018, the festival has doubled in size and has been lauded as critics' pick in both The Guardian and The Times. For full event details, costs and booking information, visit www.elgarfestival.org.
Dance the afternoon away and be in bed by 10 p.m. That's the draw of a new club event with a unique twist. People who miss dancing but thought their days of clubbing were behind them are enjoying a new monthly event at Drummond's in New Street. The afternoon disco is organised by Better Days Presents and it will be, and it will hold its first event, titled Groove Assassin, on Saturday, March the 30th, to kickstart Easter weekend. This was a way to reel in dance floor enthusiasts who want to dance the night away without having to stay up until the early hours of the morning. Now that nightclub is preparing to host its latest monthly daytime party, dedicated to bringing quality acts and headlines from the world of house and dance music. The event will run from 3 p.m. until 9 p.m. Headline act Nick Moss, aka Groove Assassin, is a pioneer in the UK's soulful deep house scene and the king of edits. Originally from Sheffield, he is well known and revered for his unique, energetic and eclectic DJ sets, carving out a name for himself with his very unique but recognisable sound, both through his productions. Mr. Moss will be supported by other Worcestershire DJs, Carl Reeks, Talia Kay and Smudged Soul, with the latter being Bigger Days Presents founder Steve Smith. It's a new monthly daytime house party for Worcester that starts on March the 30th, Mr. Smith said. I am the promoter and I also DJ and produce music, with releases on labels such as Nervous, Zed Records and Quantized Recordings and Slimmer Black. Better Days Presents is Mr. Smith's latest venture, having also co-founded the successful In My System events with friend Sean Mimarg, in brackets Mim. We have booked acts such as Sandy Rivera, Norman J, ME, Terry Farley, CJ McIntosh, Melvo Baptist and Jimster in the past, and we'll be doing the same going forward with both Better Days, Daytime Parties and My System events. I have also been playing Cafe Mambo parties with my good pal Tom Malham all across the UK and warming up for headliners such as Toddy Terry's, Roger Sanchez, etc. for the event companies Classic Events and New Vision. Early bird tickets have sold out for the event, but general release remains on sale, with prices at £8. Final release tickets are yet to be distributed.
Landlords have vowed they're here to stay after they signed a 5-year lease for a well-known city pub following rumours of their departure. Customers at the Oak Apple in Spetchley Road have raised a glass after it was revealed that the pub's landlords had signed a 5-year lease. Rumours had begun to circulate that landlords Gavin Casey and Michael Osland would step away from the watering hole to work full-time at another pub they own in Bromsgrove called Ye Old Black Cross. However, the couple put these rumours to bed and said that they have many exciting plans for both their public houses. With respect to keeping the reputation and customers happy, we understand that people don't like change, and the customers have seen a lot of change in the pub over the past 5 or 6 years, said Mr. Casey. There is stability, and nothing is worse than managers coming in and out of a place and the pub then goes bad. The last thing they want is for us to leave and run another pub, and they were concerned over what would happen to this one. They love their local pub. Mr. Oslands added that in one instance, a customer was in tears over the rumour that the two would be leaving the pub. The pair took over the Oak Apple 6 months ago and during this time had been working on building its Marston's reputation. The chain rates its pub popularity on an app called Reputation, and before the two took over the city chain, it was rated last among the chain's eateries for Worcestershire. Now the pub has climbed to fifth. I'm not going to lie, it has been very hard work and testing times, but the achievement is amazing, Mr. Casey added. On a weekend, this pub is now rammed, and it is amazing to see. We have been trying to fight for different things, like a darts and pool team, to make it more of a community pub. The two revealed they have exciting plans for the pub's future. Throughout the Euros, the pub will have a Pepsi fan zone in its garden, a designated area by Pepsi with a bar and games. It is also running a competition with school children where pupils design a new look for their garden. The winner will receive 4 Alton Towers tickets and have a plaque in the new garden once it's done.
Celebrations for the 40th anniversary of a city-based hospice raise thousands for its care of patients and families. St Richard's Hospice Grand Gala Dinner took place in the nave at Worcester Cathedral and raised, after costs, £40,000 and counting for the charity. The glittering event was hosted by Louise Hewitt, a patron of St Richard's, and saw 207 guests attend on the night. The event also marked the end of Louise's tenure as High Sheriff of Worcestershire. Tricia Cavell, fundraising director at St Richard's, said, "It was an incredible evening filled with so much joy and celebration of all the hospice has achieved in its history. We're thrilled with the amount raised to help us continue our care into the future. This achievement is testament to the generosity of our guests and supporters. Our heartfelt thanks go to everyone who contributed towards making our event a success, including all those who donated their time, services and prizes for our auction and raffle. It is thanks to the unwavering generosity of our supporters that we've been able to serve communities across Worcestershire for 40 years. Here's to the next 40 years and beyond." The Grand Gala Dinner took place on Thursday, March the 21st, and featured a rugby theme in recognition of the hospice's 40th anniversary. Sorry, ruby theme in recognition of the hospice's 40th anniversary. Louise Hewitt said, "I was delighted and honoured to host this wonderful occasion to mark the 40th anniversary of the hospice. The cathedral looked stunning and the atmosphere was joyous. A memorable evening raising much needed funds and a perfect way to end my year as High Sheriff." Former Worcester News journalist Dan Pallett of BBC Midlands Today compared the evening, while Philip Serrell, hospice patron, held the auction. Music was provided by Toscana Strings. The hospice is an independent charity caring for adults with a serious progressive illness, improving their quality of life with diagnosis, during treatment to their last days, and supporting those important to them. Each year, the hospice team supports more than 3,100 patients, family members and bereaved people in Worcestershire. It cost £10.28 million to run the hospice, 2023 to 2022 audited accounts, which includes patient care and all the necessary support services. St Richard's relies on voluntary support, including from donations, gifts in wills, retail and events for the majority of its income, with the remainder funded by the NHS. From very small beginnings, the vision to set up a hospice in South Worcestershire became a reality in 1984. And since the hospice began, St Richard's has received more than 73,000 referrals for people to access their services for patients, their loved ones, carers and the bereaved.
Historic Hartlebury Castle had a leading role setting the scene for Worcester Operatic and Dramatic Society's WADS promo shoot for Me and My Girl, write Rebecca Price and Melissa Goldney. The castle was reimagined to be the fictitious Hereford Hall in Hampshire, which features as a stately home from the classic 1930s musical, due to be staged by WADS in April at Worcester's Swan Theatre. As the cast posed around the castle grounds, donning their best smiles for some fabulous pictures, the sun most definitely had its hat on. Dan Hooper put his best foot forward as he stepped into his character Bill, the newly appointed and somewhat reluctant new Earl. He was spotted leaning on a lamppost in his royal attire, while the aristocrats looked on in bewilderment. Sally, played by Al Linford, and Bill's long-suffering girlfriend, looked on longingly for Bill's attention, only to be pushed aside by the sassy Lady Jacqueline, Lindsay Beckley, whose ulterior motive to steal Bill and his inheritance was plain to see. The rest of the family took a tour around the castle, admiring the beautiful portraits on display at Hartlebury, some of which sprang to life. Similarly to the ancestors in Me and My Girl, not one to be missed, and there was even time for a spot of tea. In the end, Bill couldn't forget his East London roots, and a classic rendition of the Lambeth Walk was in order for all to enjoy, yes, even the aristocrats. So any time you're down Lambeth Way, any evening, any day, you'll find us all, between April the 16th to 20th, doing the Lambeth Walk at the Swan Theatre. Oi! Many thanks to the wonderful team at Hartlebury Castle for allowing us to use their venue. Tickets are now on sale for Me and My Girl and can be purchased via Huntingdon Hall's box office or online through Worcester Theatres. Call 01905 611 427.
And this is an article from, a sports article rather, from the Evening News of Thursday, April the 4th. An overseas signings, Jason Holder and Nathan Smith, have linked up with Worcestershire's cricket team ahead of the 2024 season. After meeting their new teammates, the pair took part in their first practice session in Kidderminster on Tuesday, April the 12th. April the 2nd. Smith arrived in England on Monday, April the 1st, fresh from a successful season in his native New Zealand, where he ranked as the top wicket taker in the Plunkett Shield. Holder, the former West Indies Test captain, jetted in from the West Indies on Tuesday after playing four-day cricket for Barbados and had a net session alongside Smith at Chester Road. Head coach Alan Richardson welcomed their arrivals. He said, "Jason arrived Tuesday morning from the West Indies and he has already practiced with us at Kidderminster. He was really keen to get out there and meet the players and the staff, and that has been great. Nathan arrived on Monday and he also came to practice on Tuesday to stretch his legs after the flight." In view of this year's T20 World Cup, Richardson recounted the challenges in acquiring overseas players due to franchise cricket. On Holder, Richardson said, "He has been playing for Barbados and played quite a lot of four-day cricket recently. He was keen to continue and then going into the World Cup with the West Indies." On Smith, he added, "With Nathan, we had heard so many good things about him as a character, and with Jason, glowing references about how he is off the park as well." He concluded, "It feels like we've got a really nice mix. We've got Jason, who has played a lot of cricket and travelled the world and captained his country and knows what it is all about and is just excited to get out there and play some cricket. We will hugely benefit from the wealth and experience he brings. And with Nathan, it is someone who is really eager and keen to get out there. He has not played first-class cricket over here before, but he sees it as a real part of his journey."
Worcestershire County Seniors Pool Team have been crowned national champions after winning the National Senior Finals at Lowestoft. Worcestershire won their Regional 3 competition, which includes teams from the West Midlands, Staffordshire and Shropshire, meaning they qualified for the round of 16 in the national stage of the tournament. 16 county teams of 9 players across the whole of England entered, and Worcestershire came up against Kent in the first round of the knockout stages, winning 19 frames to 10. That set up a quarter-final clash against West Yorkshire, which was an enthralling contest, with Worcestershire winning by 19 frames to 16. The semi-final saw them take on Cleveland, and again it was another win for Worcestershire as they recorded a 19-12 victory. Having seen off the rest of the competition, only Berkshire stood in the way of Worcestershire lifting the national title, and in another close encounter it was Worcestershire who came out on top, 19-15. Worcestershire have also recently been celebrating the achievement of 2 of their players who have been successful in qualifying to represent England at the World Championships in Blackpool in June 2024. Tad Mazalek and Captain Kip Lenoir had master trials for England and both were successful in qualifying.
Worcester City have moved their Isuzu FA Vars semi-final first leg with Great Wakering Rovers to Six Ways Stadium. The Football Association, FA, have given the club permission to rearrange the already postponed fixture from Clanes Lane to the 11,000-seater stadium on Saturday, April the 6th. The first leg was due to take place on Saturday, March the 30th, but was cancelled due to a waterlogged pitch. And with the weather looking equally as wet this week, the FA have agreed that the fixture needs to be moved to proceed. A statement on City's website read, "Following the postponement of the FA Vars semi-final first leg at Clanes Lane on Saturday the 30th of March, we can confirm that the rearranged fixture will now take place on Saturday the 6th of April 2024 at Six Ways Stadium, 3 p.m. kickoff. With more rain forecast this week on top of an already heavily saturated pitch, the FA have granted permission for the fixture to be moved to Six Ways to ensure the first leg is completed on the 6th. The game was a 1,400 sellout, but the club have also stated that they hope to push that number up, given it is now being played at Six Ways. Tickets already sold remain valid, and we will discuss with Six Ways over the next 24 hours the potential of selling more tickets for the fixture. Car parking tickets will go on sale in the next 24 hours as well. City will now play twice in 4 days at the old home of the Worcester Warriors. They're playing their Hellenic League Premier clash with Roman Glass St George at Six Ways on Wednesday night, when they hope to take another step closer to stealing the title.
And now for the final sporting article. Former Worcester Warriors centurion Ethan Waller has announced he will retire from rugby at the end of the 23-24 season. Waller, who won 118 caps in 5 years at Six Ways, has also notched over a ton of appearance for Saints, but will now bring his 14-year professional career to an end. "I never in my wildest dreams would have imagined that I would have been a professional athlete, so I'm really proud to have called this job for over a decade," said Waller, who was part of the Warriors team that won the 21-22 Premiership Rugby Cup. "I've made some of the very best friends and memories from my career. I'll never forget that incredible game away at Leinster in 2013, winning the Premiership Rugby Cup with Worcester, and all the European away trips and socials with the teammates I get to call my friends. I want to thank both Northampton Saints and Worcester Warriors, two incredible clubs with even better people behind the scenes. To get more than 100 caps for both teams is something I'll cherish for the rest of my life." Waller has also been chair of the RPA since 2021, playing a key role in representing the interests of hundreds of current male and female professional rugby players in England. "Thanks also to the RPA, who have been an incredible organisation to work with and are such an important asset to the game. Thank you for being a safety net for all players and to all of my colleagues throughout that time. My teammates have made coming into work every day the best and made sure it's never really felt like work. Fortunately for you, my rubbish chat and even worse music is hitting the road. Thank you, boys. It's been the most enjoyable period of my life and I'll miss it dearly." Waller came through Saints Academy system, making his debut in an Anglo-Welsh Cup match against Harlequins back in 2012. He became a regular in the first team squad during the club's historic double league and cup winning campaign of 2013-14 and won Saints Young Player of the Season award. In total, Waller made 95 appearances during his first stint with Northampton, becoming a supporter favourite at Franklin's Gardens, thanks not only to his eye-catching performances, but also for helping to set up numerous fundraising events for charity. He departed for Six Ways in 2017 in search of more game time, making over 100 appearances for Worcester, but returned to Northampton in the summer of 2022 and brought up a century of Saints caps in November of that year against Newcastle Falcons.
So that is the end of our contribution for this week. The obituaries will follow the music, and then we will have the useful phone numbers. So thank you very much for listening, and keep safe, and until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Whatever you want to go, Simon.
There's only a few.
Okay, bye.
So, should we do that and then go on to the useful numbers straight after? Or do you want...
Want a break? Well, I should be able to do that, yeah.
Okay, yeah? We'll include a pause.
We'll include a pause. So Ian's going to do half, and then Margaret's going to do half.
Sounds like another plan.
Okay, thank you. And now for the obituaries. Rita Harley, formerly Aldridge, née Adams, passed away on Sunday the 25th of February. Her funeral services at St John Baptist Church, Clanes, on Wednesday the 10th of April at 11 a.m, followed by interment at Astwood Cemetery. Family flowers only, please, but donations, if desired, for Age UK may be left on the collection plate at church or sent to E.J. Gummery and Son, Worcester. Janet Valerie Anderson at Rashwood Nursing Home on the 8th of March, alongside her husband Jerry, who predeceased her in 2011, she lived in Crowell for 50 years, where there were popular residents who contributed much to the church. She'll be greatly missed by family and friends. A short cremation service will be held at Worcester Crematorium at 10:45 on the 8th of April, followed by a service of remembrance at 12:30 at Crowell Church. Family flowers only, please. Donations are invited to one of three charities: ActionAid, Royal British Legion, or the Brook Hospital for Donkeys and Horses. Lady Josephine Mary Slaney died peacefully at home on March the 9th at the age of 93. A memorial service is to be held at St Peter's Church, Markley, on Thursday the 11th of April at 11 a.m. Family flowers only, please, but donations, if desired, for St Peter's Church may be left on the collection plate at church, or alternatively, donations to the RNLI may be sent to E.J. Gummery and Sons, Worcester. Carol Patricia Hedges, née Clayton, passed away peacefully in hospital on the 13th of March. Her funeral service is at Worcester Crematorium on Wednesday the 10th of April at 2:30 p.m. Family flowers only, please, but donations, if desired, for Samaritans, St Richard's Hospice or Acorns Children's Hospice may be left on the collection plate at the crematorium or sent to E.J. Cummery and Sons. Kathleen Shields, known as Kay, of Prestwich Avenue, passed away peacefully on the 17th of March. Funeral service at Worcester Crematorium on Friday the 5th of April at 3:15. Flowers or donations, if desired, for St Richard's Hospice may be sent to E.J. Gummery and Sons, Worcester, and a collection plate will also be available at the crematorium. And finally, Terence Bertram Crowd, known as Terry, passed away on the 19th of March, aged 86. A celebration of Terry's life will take place at Worcester Crematorium on April the 12th at 11:30. Family flowers only, please, but donations, if desired, to the Stroke Association and the MND Association. And we send our best wishes to the family and friends of the recently departed at this very difficult time.
And now for the Worcester Talking Newspaper's useful numbers, correct as of the 10th of March 2024. To contact fire, police or ambulance in an emergency, call 999 or 112. For emergency social care calls to Worcestershire County Council, ring 01905 768 020. For non-urgent calls to Worcestershire County Council, ring 01905 765 765. To contact the Electricity National Grid in an emergency, dial 1005. In the event of a power cut, ring 0800 917 7953. there is a priority service available for which you can register free of charge. For that service, dial 0800 032 8302. For non-urgent calls to the fire prevention team and for fire safety, ring 0800 032 1155. For non-urgent calls to the police, ring 101. Crime Stoppers is a charity allowing people to report crime information anonymously. Their number is 0800 555 111. To contact NHS Direct, ring 111. The Domestic Abuse Helpline is 0800 980 331. For the Samaritans, just ring 116 123.
Citizens Advice is 0808 278 7891. Age UK can be found on 01905 724 294. Worcester Talking News here in Wilds Lane is 01905 767766. Listeners should be aware that this is not manned daily and you may get an answering service. Please be patient if a reply is required. Worcester Live, that's for the Swan Theatre and the Huntingdon Hall box office. The number is 01905 611427. Malvern Theatre's box office, 01684 892277. Norbury Theatre box office in Droitwich is 01905 770154. Number 8 Theatre in Pershaw, 01386 555488. For Sense Adventures, that is walking for the visually impaired, ring D. Jones on 07920 144614. Or use their website, www.senseadventures.co.uk. Worcester Wheels number for transport is 01905 450 654. And that will be available from 8.30 to 4.30 p.m. 8.30 a.m. to 4.30 p.m. Link Nurseries at Powick have a gardening session for the visually impaired on Friday mornings. Their telephone number is 01905 831 881 for more information.